You are listening to Business Day Spotlight.
Welcome to the latest edition of our weekly Spotlight podcast. Today I'm joined by Business Day writer at large and resident Eskom expert Carol Payton, who's on the line from Cape Town. So the lights are on today. Is it because they finally got some diesel, or do you think they've made some actual improvements at the power stations where they've been battling?
I think both. So the diesel isn't enough to sort of make up the full gap. So they've got diesel now, and they also have obviously got some of the units that went down back online. That said, the difficulty is that given the state of Eskom's plant, more can go down at any point, and they've got no way of knowing what's going to go down when.
It's very, very concerning, especially given that two of them are brand new and actually still not even finished, Medupi and Kusile, and they've cost us a fortune. You've had some great stories out this week on the absolute mess those power stations are in. Can you talk a bit about that and how we got into that situation and what's wrong there?
Yeah, I think it's probably the most disturbing news to have come out of the week. Which is that these two big power stations, which were supposed to make up the gap, which were supposed to solve the problems we had in 2013 and so on with load shedding, haven't actually solved that problem. And the reason they haven't solved that problem is because they've been badly designed and badly built. So the result is that those units are only producing sort of like 50% of what they were expected to produce. And that's because some of the technical issues and the design issues means that these units trip frequently or have to be taken down out of service more frequently than they should be to do maintenance. So it's a pretty much disastrous situation. You know, Eskom tabled a sort of list to the regulator of exactly what these design faults were. And they are serious and they are huge. So things like the ash collection is inadequate, the cooling system is inadequate, the coal pulverization process is inadequate, the computer system is not up to specification. So these are like really big fundamental problems, and we don't have any idea yet of whether these are easily solved or can be solved or how they will be solved. So that kind of casts a new light on sort of the energy security situation go over the next few years.
Yeah. But Carol, we've spent, I think, 300 billion rand is the number that was mentioned in Parliament this week on these two power stations. How do they get it so wrong? And how does it take us so long to figure out that there's these massive problems with things like design and construction?
You know, there have been problems with Medupi, which they started first, since the get-go. So since the very beginning, there were problems. And Eskom has been working through these problems. So I think initially they couldn't get the boilers on site because they were too big. Then the next thing was all the welding was defective. Then the next thing was they failed, you know, various critical tests. And the next thing was the control and instrumentation system failed for like 18 months. So there've been these problems, these ongoing problems. And I think that Eskom has been dealing with them, and not well, obviously.
Yeah.
And so they've been trying to manage these processes, and I think that the realization is starting to sink in that maybe Eskom actually can't manage these processes. Maybe Eskom actually does have the skills to fix what has been happening, what has been going wrong at
Medupi and Kusile. Yeah, and we had Minister of Public Enterprises Pravin Gordhan saying this week they are looking outside for skills. They're going to bring in outside experts, 2 to 3 engineers, I think, from the Italian multinational power company. It is a bit concerning if they think 2 or 3 engineers from an Italian multinational firm can do a job that Eskom's 48,000 employees that they couldn't find among their own employees, given that they've got such huge number of staff.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the idea behind these getting these 3 or 2 or 3 top engineers in is to just to kind of come up with a diagnosis or to look at the diagnosis that Eskom's put on the table. It's obviously not going to be a plan of action to fix them. A plan of action to fix these power stations is a much bigger, much, much bigger operation. Eskom does have 48,000 employees. Unfortunately, the top skills have left Eskom. They left over a period of, you know, a decade or more.
Yeah.
And Eskom hasn't managed to replace that. And it hasn't been the kind of environment in which top engineers, want to work. So it used to be, you know, if electrical engineering was your thing, then you would want to work at Eskom. That's no longer the case.
Yeah, we've got Finance Minister Tito Mboweni presenting his budget to Parliament. We're expecting to see a bailout for Eskom. What do you think he's going to come up with, and how is he going to balance the numbers? Because he obviously has his own challenges ahead.
I have no idea how Minister Mboweni is going to balance the budget. I don't think it can be balanced within the deficit in which they were projecting or they were hoping to come under. But that said, yes, definitely they have to. There isn't another way around it. It's come to that. The taxpayer is going to have to bail out Eskom. So whether they do that through, and it's going to have to be a big bailout. So whether they do that through, you know, a debt relief or debt swap kind of plan with government taking on some of the Eskom debt, or whether they do that in a combination of sort of equity injections over years, because, you know, the reality is that even if government takes 100 billion, which is the number, you know, that the Eskom board put out there, if it takes 100 billion of Eskom's debt off its balance sheet, within 2 years, that 100 billion is going to be back because, Eskom and Medupi and Kusile are still being built. And there's still a huge borrowing program to fund this build. So Eskom's debt is still rising. We haven't sort of reached anywhere near the ceiling yet.
Yeah. But Carol, is the warning, I mean, is the red light, is this not the end of the road? Is this not where we have to stop and realize we have to open up the electricity sector? We can't keep doing things the way we've been doing it. I know Ramaphosa has put plans on the table to split Eskom into three separate units. And we can talk about that shortly. And that any plans, you know, he's come out yesterday to say don't expect retrenchments. Any plans that he's put on the table so far has seen fierce resistance from the unions, from opposition parties, even from the ANC. So how desperate must the crisis get before we realize it can't just continue as usual? We can't afford it.
Yeah, no, that's the problem. So yesterday, the president's speech in Parliament, I mean, some of what he said was extremely disturbing, such as we won't cut jobs because how then do you cut costs in Eskom? You can't cut, you know, your primary energy costs. You can't cut your borrowing costs very easily other than, you know, government taking on some of it. Mm-hmm. So the only really space you've got to cut is employees' jobs. So that's a problem. But then on the other hand, the president did make it very clear that, you know, the government is starting to realize that centralizing so much risk in Eskom is a really dangerous thing to have done. And it's important to move away from that. So, you know, the way he put it was saying, you know, we've got all our eggs in one basket, and if all our eggs broke, then we don't have any more eggs. So he's saying, you know, let's rather spread this risk, and let's rather bring other producers into the market. So I think that we have arrived at that market, at that point. I don't think we've ever been so far at that point before. But yes, there is huge political resistance, and it's going to be quite difficult to overcome that.
Yeah. The proposed plan to split it in three, briefly give us the pro and con arguments.
Well, the pro argument is there are two pros. The one is that Eskom is so big that it's hard to manage, and you can't get a sense. It's hard for the managers to get a sense of of you know, the revenues and the costs and so on, and the efficiencies of each division. So you split it into these three separate divisions, which is actually, you know, pretty much Eskom's business. So your generation, which is your power stations, your transmission, which is your grid, and then your distribution, which is like your substations and so on.
Yeah.
You split it up that way, and you're able to manage it and manage it more easily. The other key issue the key advantage is that you're then able to have an independent transmission company, independent grid company, that can bring other producers into the market.
And that is a proposal that was long on the table. I mean, I remember with the 2008 load shedding round, for example, the likes of Anglo and some of the big mining companies were proposing building their own much smaller scale coal-fired power stations. And one of the issues was that they couldn't get access to the grid, to Eskom's grid, to get it from the power station to a mine. So obviously, there are options to alleviate some of the stress, but at a much smaller scale than the likes of what we've seen with Medupi and Kusile.
Yeah, exactly. So there are options. And the other thing is that, you know, renewable energy is quite quick, relatively quick to build a solar farm or a wind farm. These things can be done, and these things can be brought onto the grid much more quickly.
Yeah.
So there's that. And yes, it has been a long time coming, but you know, there was such a lot of ambiguity and confusion and opposition over the previously. I personally think we sort of at the top of the hill now. I do think that within government itself, there is a new realization that this, you know, this what you call sort of liberalization of the market has to take place.
Yeah.
I don't think we've got a choice. You know, I think that we reached a point where there is no choice. So even though the unions hate it and they see it as a conspiracy and they see it as, you know, privatization dressed up, I don't think there's a choice. And if we want to have a secure energy supply, we've got to go that route.
Yeah. The renewable energy programs, I mean, you mentioned that there's been some, you know, quite fierce opposition to those as well. You have a lovely story in today's Business Day on the independent power projects and the pricing issues. The unions have said that this is, you know, it's blowing out Eskom's costs. It's very expensive and it's costing jobs and it's putting jobs at risk, especially in the coal fields of Mpumalanga. Give us an update on what is the debate on the IPPs? What's the road forward? And is this, should, do we need more of them?
Yeah, we definitely need more. Because for the simple reason that Eskom, government hasn't got money now to go and invest in new capacity. So we need the private sector to come in and build some more solar farms and some more wind farms. That has to happen, and that has to happen quite quickly. So we need more IPPs. But yes, they have become politically controversial, very controversial. And part of the concern over the IPPs coming from the unions is a genuine and real and valid concern. And part of it is just nonsense. So the real concern is over jobs. So you have had a situation, you know, there are power stations in Mpumalanga, really old ones, which have already shut down half their units. Government has done absolutely nothing to support those communities, you know, that previously worked on the mines and worked on the power station. So the unions are already sitting with the kind of social consequence of that.
Yeah.
And so there they've got a valid concern. You know, what is government's plan? If you're going to phase out coal or phase in renewables, what's the plan for the workers? And this is something that, you know, we all have to take into account just because of the social consequences of of something like laying off, you know, entire communities of employees. So that's the valid concern. But then there's also a complete nonsense political opportunist issue that is being raised here with a lot of propaganda about how IPPs are destroying Eskom. IPPs are not destroying Eskom. In fact, if we hadn't had IPPs this last week, we would have had to shed another, you know, 1,000 megawatts, I think, or something, from the grid. So the IPPs are delivering energy, and they're not destroying Eskom. The problem here is that the first round of renewables. So this is the same everywhere in the world. When renewable energy first became a thing, the first round was very expensive, and this is always, almost always the case with technology. So as technology develops, you know, these prices have come down hugely. So, you know, solar from the time, you know, it was first put into the grid in the first round was in 2011. You know, and compared to now, the price has dropped by 75%.
Yeah.
Or 50%, and the wind price has dropped like 75%. So there have been huge changes. But the problem is that Eskom, these are 20-year power purchasing agreements. So Eskom still sits with the legacy problem of round one and two.
Yes.
So now we've got Pravin Gordhan saying, well, we're going to renegotiate with the producers. Fine, except that these are pre-existing contracts. And not only, you know, producers have raised this finance to build these things, they've spread the costs, the financing costs over 20 years. These investments have been sold into the secondary market. So very difficult to now come along and say, oh, listen, investors, thank you, but actually we're going to renegotiate what we agreed here. So it's a very dangerous thing to do.
Yes. Yeah, investors don't like it when the rules get changed, you know, midway through the game. And and I think given that we're trying to attract investment and we've had this terrible track record of regulatory uncertainty and changing the rules, that is actually the last thing you want to do at this point. Carol, how long before we see the end of load shedding?
I don't think anyone is prepared to give you an answer to that. I personally don't. I think we're in it for the next 2-3 years.
Yeah.
That's my view. I can't see that the you know, this quality of Eskom's power stations is suddenly going to be dramatically reversed. I think, you know, I think Jan Oberholzer, the chief operating officer of Eskom, did say, you know, when he was speaking about the maintenance situation a few weeks ago, he said, you know, it's going to take us 2 years to catch up. So for me, I'd say like, yeah, well, we've got 2 years of load shedding in that case.
Yeah.
Obviously, governments are not saying that. Yeah. They're saying, you know, we'll end load shedding by April. I'm not so sure about that.
Basically, we need to make sure we've got some alternative energy options at home, I think is the main takeaway. Carol, thanks very much for your time. That was Carol Payton, our writer at large, joining us from Cape Town. And we'll be back next week with an installment after the budget.